welcome back for class number three, how to use energy healing to release emotional blocks. I want to introduce my dear friend Rob Jokel to all of you. Rob Jokel is a holistic physical therapist. He's the developer of a method called integrative immune strengthening therapy and has been helping individuals in his private practice for almost 30 years to overcome a variety of so-called incurable illnesses. He's integrating his knowledge of craniosacral therapy, visceral manipulation, joint manipulation, biomechanics, and energy healing with his ability to perceive subtle energies. Rob has developed unique healing methods that facilitate this integration and alignment and bring it into a coherency with five levels of consciousness. He's also the director and producer of a self-help documentary film called Immune to Cancer, where he teaches you how to bring the full strength of your immune system to the aid of your medical program. And I just want to add that Rob has also been a personal mentor to me for we've known each other over 20 years, and he's been an inspiration, a mentor, and just a wonderful human being in my life. So, Rob, I'm so honored and happy that you're here with us, and I can't wait to hear what you have to share about this topic tonight.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
Yeah, my pleasure. So could you start us out by telling a little bit about how you got into this work yourself and how these clients with seemingly incurable illnesses ended up on your doorstep?
Okay. I'll try to keep this brief so we can have more time for the information that I want to give. But basically, I went to physical therapy school. I worked in an outpatient clinic where they had people with chronic pain, and they also had people with pain that were going to have surgery. So there was a group that were going to have surgery and hopefully get their problems resolved. And then there was another group that had pains for years and nobody was really helping them. And there was no internet then, but I tried to find out who were the people in the world, depending on, didn't matter what profession, whether they were physical therapists or acupuncturists or chiropractors or osteopaths and so forth. I tried to find out who was getting results and could I study with them and can I learn from them so that I could help these people that I was working with. And so then that's basically where I started, and I did mostly hands-on techniques with these people, manual therapy techniques. And then at some point, while I started working with these people, I remember there was a time in 1985 where I saw a green lightning bolt come out of somebody's shoulder, which was kind of strange for a physical therapist who just was interested in double-blind studies and a scientific approach and so forth. And I said, I think your shoulder just got healed because I saw a green lightning bolt come out of your shoulder. And then a couple of minutes later, I started getting nervous and started looking to see for an intellectual reason why I saw that green lightning bolt. But that's kind of how it started. And I kept learning and growing and kept including more and more things so I could be able to help more and more people.
So it sounds like you really gathered a lot of what you felt was the most potent techniques and pulled them together to get the greatest results and benefits. Would you talk a little bit about your approach now to working with clients around releasing emotional energy blocks?
I became somebody that was very highly skilled and had a tremendous amount of tools in my toolbox in order to help people to fix them, what problems they came in. If you were blocked, I would sit there and try to help you release whatever that block was. And even with that, there were still some people that I wasn't really able to reach. And I started to think that maybe I should start from the reverse. From, let's say you're already healthy, what would you do now? And it's an interesting thing. I've been like that since I'm a little kid. I was always very good in math. When I was in elementary school, when a student got the wrong answer, I would try to work backwards to figure out where he went off on his track and try to bring him back on. So if the teacher couldn't help him, I would say, you know, John, did you, you know, on the third step here, did you do this, or did you do this, and then I would help him come back. So the same kind of reasoning I worked with this type of holistic healing with people And to give you an example, I had a very old friend actually by chance come into Juice Press, which is an organic juice place in Manhattan, in New York. And we sat down together and had some juice together. And she knows who I am, and actually I helped her years ago. She had a thyroid problem, and they wanted to take her thyroid out, and I helped her with some counseling and nutrition and so forth at that point. But this time she came to me and she said, you know, Rob, I have a lot of trouble looking at people straight in the face, and like an eye-to-eye contact. You know, could you help me with that? And so we were sitting there together, and I thought about it for a while, and I could have handled by one of two approaches, and I like to call this like either it's the vehicle or it's the driver. So the vehicle is the body or the auric field that a person lives in. The driver is the person who's behind the wheel, who's taking this vehicle on this adventure we call life. Mm-hmm. And whether that adventure is internal or external, that life is an adventure. And whoever's behind the wheel, basically most people would call that the soul, and the aura body, the auric body is the way that we have feelings and we have thought and we have our physicality and we relate to others and we relate to God. So I asked her, so if I would have gone into her about the emotional aspect of why she, you know, had difficulty seeing, that would have been one way to approach it. Uh-huh. And that would have been approaching it through directly to the emotional block. And I could have asked, how long did she have this for? When did she first notice that? What was going on in her life at that time? And there's a series of things that we could have done. We could have used visualization. We could have used some matter of motion or release, where we would have described what the energy block was and tried to work some way to free herself. Or we could work with the driver of this vehicle. And so the question I asked her, I said to her, I said, let's say, you know, you no longer had trouble looking somebody in the eye, but you felt very relaxed and very comfortable in eye-to-eye contact. Now, what would change? How would you be different in your life? And she thought about it for a minute, and she said, well, I would be more confident, okay? So I am talking to the driver of this vehicle at this point.
Yeah.
And so then I said, well, if you were more confident, again, being persistent, like if anyone knows me, you know that I am that way. And I said, if you were more confident, you know, how would your life change? What would be different in your life? And she thought about it for a while. And then she started telling me that she goes to church once a week and she takes a cab there. And she'd really like to go like four times a week because they have all these great activities going on in these different days. But she's been afraid to drive. And so she said if she was more confident, she would go back and take a class on driving to refresh herself about driving because she hasn't driven in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then she knew exactly what she would do. And then she said she would, you know, buy a car, and then she would go to these meetings for, you know, for a few times a week. And it was very significant for her because a couple of years ago, her husband died in an automobile accident.
Mm.
And so for her to go and do that, she started talking then about the terror that she would have to face about getting in a car again, because she hasn't driven a car since her husband died in the automobile accident that they were together in. So she knew that by doing that, she would be facing and actually moving forward in her life from the event that happened about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, in a sense, getting in touch, asking questions in such a way that she's still dealing with these emotional blocks or the knots or you know, whatever name you want to give to them, but we're looking to contact, in her case, the driver. And when she starts to even imagine the action that she's going to take, then these blocks come out. but they're coming up in relationship from the inside out. And I think that this is very important. And this approach, I believe, is what's really helped me with the more difficult cases, with the people with serious cancers or serious neurological problems and so forth, to be able to really access the person or the driver that has these problems that are located within the auric field.
I really love this example that you gave, and I especially want to just highlight one sentence that I heard you say here at the end, which I think is so simple and yet so potent that I don't want people to run by it, which is, you said, imagine, you told her, or you worked with her to imagine the actions she was going to take when she no longer had this problem. And that imagining part as the first step is a really potent way to begin to talk to, as you say, the driver. And I also love how you're sort of going right to the root, to the core, by talking and identifying, is this an issue that could be more effectively dealt with by going to the driver, to the soul of the person, rather than starting at the emotional energy level.
So there's many ways to come about and get the same approach. And
yeah,
this is a lot of what we're doing here with healing work, is helping the person to get back into the flow of their own life and to help the person to know themselves better and be more authentic and to be more themselves, be more uniquely themselves.
Can you say a little bit more about how you would discern when you are working with somebody whether or not it's an issue of the vehicle or the driver, as you put it?
I think a lot has to do with what the person is coming to see you for. So, I mean, if somebody comes in, and being a physical therapist, if somebody comes in and let's say their knee is hurting or their hip is hurting or their ankle's hurting and so forth, they're not really signing up for a whole process of having to grow in a way past whatever these blocks are in their body. Sometimes I think the respectful thing to do is to do your best to see if the situation can just be fixed. So, I mean, I've had many people over the years, they might come in with an ankle or a knee or a shoulder problem, and you would do your best to try to help them in a session or two, because that's really what they were coming for. And so if it could be fixed, and that's what they wanted, I would certainly do that. So trying to think of an example to give you where it would be in those levels. I remember a man that came to me, and he got engaged, and he was getting married, and he had a lot of back pain.
Mm-hmm.
So on one level, there were facets in his low back that were all jammed together that would cause the pain. There were different muscles that were out of balance in his back and his pelvis and so forth that would contribute to this compression of the facet joints that would cause the pain. But then on another level, there was a very strong emotional component. He was very afraid of getting married. And at the same time, he wanted to get married, so he had a conflict. So with him, we worked on this emotional level, and I did what's called, it's part of the Upledger Institute, somatic emotional release. I got him to tell me about what color was the pain, what size, what shape it was, if it was filled with fluid, how much fluid would it contain, would the fluid be thick or thin, and then we get to give that pain a name, and then let that energy that we've identified that has a name talk right through that person's own vocal cords. So you're actually talking to a part of the body, and this is just one way to get the person to connect by having them give you more and more details about that part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And from talking to him, you could see the conflict that he had, that he thought that he was going to get married, and then that was going to be the end of him ever having fun again. So, which probably not the only man to feel that way in life when they're getting married. So we kind of worked out a deal between those two energies. They create a resolution. And it wasn't so much that I really got to know him, the driver, that I really helped him to grow so much, but he had an energy block, an emotional block in his low back. We dialogued with it. He found a way that the two energies could be at peace with each other. They hugged. They shook hands first. They hugged, and his back pain went away. So that would be somebody that came in, wanted a short-term solution, and we dealt with the blocks that was in his physical and his emotional body and mental body.
Yeah, that's a great example. It's so interesting because I know Candace Pert, you know, sort of proved that energy has consciousness, and I think this is a leap that I really am trying to help all of our listeners, our students on the call, understand a bit, which is the, I love how you explained that you invited this man to let the voice of this energy, let the energy of what he was experiencing have a voice. And this is sometimes a bit of a leap for people who are new to this work. I'm wondering if you could give everybody maybe an example or walk them through an experience of what you're talking about.
One thing that you can do is you can check through your whole system and see if there's any area that's pain or that's tight or tense, and just slow down your breathing. And then you could take like a little breath in through your nose and a long breath out through pursed lips through your mouth and do that like 4 times in a row. And as you're doing that, little breath in and long breath out, just see if there's an area that you'd like to work with and let an image come to your mind. Like I worked with one woman, and the image that came to her, she had stomach pains, and it was like she had a rock with sharp edges on it. And so as you see this image, because first you want to face whatever the block or the challenge is within the system, you don't want to avoid that step. And then you can use your mind, your imaging, to visualize something opposite. So in that case, the woman looked at like a stream of water that could erode that stone and smooth out the edges and eventually get rid of it. And so whatever it is the opposite, if you come out with something that's red hot in the flame, you might want to picture a nice blue, cool, healing lake or stream that you're in. You don't want to do it too long because you want to stay focused and not have your mind drift somewhere else. Then you can take a little breath in, a long breath out, and then on the second breath, when you breathe out, just open your eyes and just see yourself resolving this problem by using the opposite.
It's such a lovely, simple little process that you just talked us through, and as you were doing it, as you were guiding it, I did it, I tried it out too. And I think one question that would come up, I think, for some people, perhaps, because sometimes this work, when you do something like that, you can feel very palpably of a sensation. And sometimes it's very, very subtle, and sometimes people don't feel much of anything at all. And I'm wondering if you could say something about that, Rob.
I think trusting whatever your experience is the key point. And not to be looking, oh, I should have some very intense, theatrical, dramatic experience as opposed to something that's subtle. Whatever that experience is, you have to accept that is real and trust that experience, and then you just go on. And this is something that you could practice if you had a pain. You could do it 3 times a day, say, for a period of time until you run out of the benefit from doing it. So I'll give you one more quick type of visualization that you could do that I find very helpful when you talk about emotional blocks and so forth. And let's say I'm trying to remember, I was talking to a client that had cancer, and she was telling me about an experience when she was young with her mom that she felt ignored, that the mom was like raving about another mom's child, but not really saying anything about her child. So here are these two moms talking, and the little girl is there with the mom, and the mom is really thrilled about the other mom's child, but not saying, hey, you know, my child just did this great thing too, which she just had. And the little girl felt very bad after that experience, bad enough that it stayed with her in her life. So one thing that you can do that works surprisingly well is to have the person go back to that experience that's painful, like a memory, and then they're going to write a new end to the story. And memories are very interesting things. They change all the time. We combine different memories together. If there's an event on the street and there's a fight on the street and 20 people are watching, everybody has a different memory of that experience. And that's been shown. So one thing that you can do with a person and what we did with her is to take a look at that memory and say, okay, face the pain. Here's the mother excited about the other mom's child but not about her own child when her child was there. Now let's change the memory. And so she faces the pain. She sees the experience that was painful. And then she, in her mind, writes a new story. And now the mother winks at the child, lets the child know that she knows that she did this wonderful thing, but this wasn't really the right time for her to say it. And then really tells the child, you know, later how wonderful she thinks she is and what her accomplishments were, and that she didn't want to brag in front of the other mother because she didn't think it would be something that would be appropriate in that situation, that the other mom might be, you know, upset or jealous or and so forth. But it was important for the child to know that the mom knew how great her child was. And she changed that memory, and her whole energy system changed. So that's a very interesting thing, and an easy thing that we can all do is to remember some energy or some memory that was painful to us, say, with somebody that was very important to us, like a parent, and then actually go back and change that memory, and then to do that and practice that.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love the simplicity of that, Rob. Then, yeah, we can rewrite the new ending to the story. I love that.
And then there's another situation where when we talk about this driver and the vehicle, and the vehicle being the auric field and the driver being the soul that's behind the wheel and has its foot on the gas, taking this vehicle on an adventure through life. I had a client a few years ago, and he was very religious, and he came in with depression and different aches and pains and so forth, but a lot of fatigue and a lot of depression. And he's been to a lot of good people to try to help him. A lot of very, very good people with energy and hands-on and things like that. But it shows you when somebody comes that way, there is so much pressure from the person coming for you to fix them. That's what you do when you see a healthcare practitioner. Mm-hmm. They look for what's the problem, is there a hidden cause to it, you know, and he was hoping I would be the brilliant one that was going to figure out this very intricate, amazing, hidden cause so we could crack that open and he would be well. And so there's pressure in that. We're all trained, if we're a health professional or a healer and so forth, to try to help people the best that we can. So from both sides of the equation, there's so much pressure to try and fix somebody. So he came in, and I'm listening to him, and I could see and I could feel from him that not only did he want so badly for me to be responsible for his problem and do my best to fix him, and also there was a long line of people before me that had failed, but I needed to know what the results would be if we fixed him and what the results were of having this depression and having this fatigue. And after I talked to him for probably 20 minutes or so, I started to understand that his life was filled with obligation, whether it was with his children, whether it was with his wife, whether it was with his religious beliefs, whether it was with his work. He went from one obligation to another, to another, to another, to another, to another. The only time in this man's life, and this is the important thing, the only time in this man's life that he could be free from obligation was when he was fatigued and depressed. So So if you were going to go there and try to free up this emotional, physical, mental, spiritual block that was in his auric field, you would really be doing him a disservice, because this was the only time that he could have his own space and his own time to be himself. So it was really working for him in a way. It was managing a problem that he had. So we had to first start to look at what was going on in his life that he had no ability to really to own his own life. And then to try to find out who was he and what did he really want out of his life? What was the things that were important to him? So he had to grow first, because you couldn't take away that what you would call an emotional block or a knot, because it was really keeping him alive.
Yes. This is so important what you just said, and I love this example that you gave, because it's really showing that you've got so many things, but one that I just want to name immediately, which is that we don't make these blocks or problems because we want to punish ourselves. We actually do it for really important, good reasons that that ultimately don't serve us well. But they do serve us well, but we want to find another way to be served that might not be so detrimental to our physical health.
Absolutely.
What a potent story, and it epitomizes so many things. It's one that I would love to kind of hear over and over again. There were just some really key things that you said here, like that question of what would the results be if this issue got fixed. The thing that you named of the client coming in and also the therapist sitting there, both with the pressure of fix me, fix me, fix me, and all of the subtle implications that have to be addressed in order for any kind of transition or health transition to stick or to unfold. We're really needing to look at how is it serving me? How did the creative subconscious, or whether we call this the driver or the soul, come up to create this in the first place to help me manage the things in my life that I haven't known any better way to manage?
Absolutely. I can tell you one more example that comes to mind, and it's an interesting example. A woman came to me with fibromyalgia, and she was referred from some other very good health practitioners. And she was in pain in different spots all over. She was depressed. She was fatigued. And there was such a strong pull. She says, I heard about you. You were so highly recommended. You'll be the one basically that, is going to get down to the bottom of this thing and fix me. And just wanting to, hand over the baton to me. Okay, you're the brilliant holistic physical therapist we heard about. Go ahead and fix me. And I could just see that no matter what I would say to her from a perspective of fixing, her system would not be able to really shift or to change or to receive that. It just was not going to work. And it would be very difficult to really to try to give you details about that, but it's kind of an intuitive type of thing that you develop with the experience with this. And I think it's so helpful to look at her vehicle with all the focus wanted to be on the vehicle and to fix, because fixing happens in the vehicle. There's no fixing when it comes to the soul. With the soul, there has to be an invitation, a creating of space, allowing the person to come out, allowing movement to come out from them. So you can't fix someone to order for their soul to emerge, for their light to shine. You have to give space for that. And so it's the same thing that I'm talking about. I asked her again, what if all your pain and your fatigue and your depression was gone, now what would you do in life? And she did not really take kindly to that question. She got, pretty annoyed at me, pretty pissed off. So you have to be able, as a practitioner, to be able to be in a space to allow the person to not be happy with you. Because if you're not going to try and fix them, they're usually going to be pretty agitated because you're taking them out of their zone of comfort. Because so many times what happens is once you get into the medical system, you're going from one doctor to another, you can actually get addicted into that dynamic of that connection that you have with that person that you're demanding to be helped, to be fixed. And that person is doing their best to try and fix you, you know, and try to help you in that way. And we can all get, you know, involved in that kind of addictive type of a thing where you could, like, look to release emotional blocks and so forth. And the idea is you want to release these blocks so now you can learn about yourself and move on with your life. But that's much scarier. So people get comfortable in dealing with what's wrong with them and illness rather than dealing with health. Health can be much more confrontational than actually illness can be in most times. So I stayed with that and I continued with her. And eventually, we built up trust because she realized I wasn't going to run away. I wasn't going to get scared and, you know, of her getting angry at me or being annoyed or questioning me, why are we even asking these kind of questions and so forth. And I did my best to explain to her why we were doing this and so forth. And eventually, she started talking about these creative processes that she was involved with and making films in a very specific way, specific venue and films. And as she got into it and started really talking about it and opening up, and you could see her light started to come back because she started to emerge all of a sudden somewhere into it, about a half hour into her getting enthusiastic and her passion starting to come back and talking about all the things she would like to get back to doing and new projects she would like to do. She said, you know, this is very strange. This is the first time, and I don't know how long, I don't have any pain in my body right now. So it shows you how powerful it can be and how important it is not just to work with the vehicle and not just to work with the driver, but to work with both and to be able to discern with which client what you would choose. When do you use both? When do you use one? When do you use the other? And to have that in mind, I find the metaphor works extremely well for clients and actually people that I would train. The driver and the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow, boy, that's a great kind of way of addressing, you know, like addressing both. And there's a couple points you made that I think are so important, and I wonder if you could say a little bit more of something about, well, there's two things that really stood out for me that you said. One was that dealing with health can be more confrontational than dealing with illness for some people, and I don't know if you'd like to, if there's anything more you could say about what you explain a little bit more about what you mean by that, because that's such a potent statement, and I think it's really true in my experience, too, with working with people.
People like to be in their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so if you're used to being ill, or if you're used to being in pain, no matter how much it might suck to have that be part of your life, it's what you know now. It's what's comfortable. So to grow beyond that is what's scary or what's terrifying. Now, many times, and not all the time, but there are very many times that a person that's on their path in their life and then something comes up on the path that seems like insurmountable, that they can't get through it. And so they're not able to continue on their path, and then they get what you would call a block. Or they get tied up in a knot somehow. And so whenever you untie that knot or you free that block, now they have to go back still and face whatever it is that took them off their path in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's an easy way to look at it. So that's what's harder, is whatever took them off their path to go back and face it is much harder than to do what was managing your fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. And I think the thing is that so oftentimes we try to judge what those things are or minimize what those things are. They're not rational. They're not logical. You know, and I think we have to be willing to work with that part of the self, no matter how trivial or trite or insignificant it might seem. There's obviously something really potent in there that it put us off the path in the first place. You know, the other thing I'd love to ask you about, Rob, you said another really great point, which is that, you know, when you start to ask these questions, these very deep, poignant questions that clients might not be happy with you. They might not like that you're asking them to go there, and that you do have to deal with both the vehicle and the driver. So when you ask these questions and somebody's not happy with you, what can you suggest to our practitioners out there?
You just have to be able to tolerate being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think you just build up a tolerance for being uncomfortable while you're sitting with another person. And I think that just is a matter of practice. And over time and over time and over time, you just get more and more comfortable with being uncomfortable to the point where you start to becoming more and more comfortable in that state. So I think that's the key thing, is when those feelings come up, you don't have to manage them in such a way. You can allow them to flow through your body and just to be more accepting of that. That allows you to be more flowing and more open, and it creates a great environment for the other person to be more open. But beyond that, what I would recommend, that if a client's not happy with that type of direction, then what I like to do, probably when it gets into that situation the most, is to really share from my own heart that you care, that you want to help this person, and just tell the truth from your own heart about the situation that's here. You know, that here you are, you're in the situation, you've been from one person to another, they haven't been able to help you, you've tried, you know, the dynamic of trying to be fixed and so forth. Maybe it's important to explore something beyond that, and that you found or you know of other people that have really helped clients in this way by using the both approaches, the driver and the vehicle. So I think you just have to be honest with people, and you have to allow yourself, in a sense, to be naked so that you allow that other person to be naked. Because when you're really working with somebody from the soul-to-soul level, it doesn't work from the intellect. You can't try to stay in control and manage yourself and expect the other person to let down and open up and show you their soul. You have to be doing the work yourself. So you have to be asking yourself the questions, how could I be more uniquely myself? You have to ask yourself the question, if it was Laura, how could I be more Laura? Or Rob, how can I be more authentically myself? You ask yourself the question, what am I built for in this life? Where do my gifts and the things that I enjoy, where do they intersect? And how am I putting energy into those things? So that the more you're moving forward in your life and enjoying your life and feeling a sense of purpose and passion, people are going to feel that from you, so that you would be a good guide for somebody else to do that. And I don't think there's any way to fake that. It's not a technique. It's not something you can mentally understand without having that experience within your own being. You have to be doing this for yourself.
Yeah. Boy, I love that. There is a question that's come in here, if we have a minute now.
We could spend the rest of the time with questions. It would be great.
Okay. All right. So let's do that. I'm going to let me start by reading one question that came in, and then I'll open up the lines. So here we go. If a person is fully aware that their vehicle has collisions, and they are intuitive about why they, as the driver, have repetitive collisions but can't seem to fully retrain themselves with what they know would be helpful in their quest to be a more perfect driver, and they keep filling themselves with distractions by helping other people and their problems ahead of helping themselves, where in the energy field would you concentrate on looking for the blockages to clear and align the auric fields to find a more complete balance, to yield a more fulfilling life, and find the success and happiness they are capable of?
That's quite a question.
That's a long question.
With this type of question that's so intricate, and looking to be a more perfect driver and so forth, right away that would key me into that I want to work on the level of the soul, because I don't see, this person is already working so hard to fix themselves. They want to be more perfect. They're already working so hard to fix that I don't think from the attitude of trying to fix something in the aura field that would be of much value to this person until we first got to know that person's soul and what was meaningful to them in their life, and tried to help them to start putting more of their time and energy into the things that were deeply important to them.
Mm. Beautiful. So this would be questions of this, as you call it, of the soul. If you'd like to ask Rob a question, we've got about a little bit more than 5 minutes left on the call. So now's a great opportunity to ask him a question. Just press star 6 to unmute yourself if you have another question.
Rob, am I unmuted?
Yeah.
You are unmuted.
Would you approach a patient with the concept of taking them out of their comfort zone when dealing with the idea that their health might be more painful to deal with than that their health might be more painful than dealing with the pain of their disharmony, and outright ask them if it's okay to take them out of their comfort zone?
I mean, I would never know until I met the patient or met the client. So everybody's going to be different. There's no set answer for this. That might take somebody and, you know, make them feel so misunderstood or disrespected that they would never want to work with you again. So you're going to have to be intuitive and feel your way through that. And there's no set answer that every person is going to be different.
Fair enough. Thank you.
So, Rob, we've got just a couple minutes left. This has been such an inspiring talk and perspective that you've brought to us. I certainly have been taking numerous notes as you've been talking of things that I want to, that are just so great gems that I want to continue to work with myself as a practitioner. And any closing comments or remarks that you might want to give us?
If you go on my website, immunetocancer.com, so it's immunetocancer.com, there's two YouTubes on there, and they're two patients of mine that had very serious lung cancer, and both who did extremely well. One that's alive and doing well 7 years later, and one I think is about 17 years later. And statistics for those stages in lung cancer is less than a 5% chance to live 5 years. Actually, with stage 4 lung cancer, it's 5% chance to live 1 year. So only 5% of the people live beyond a year. So at least that's what the statistics were at that time. But it's interesting. You can see them on video, and it's part of the film that's coming out. And each one of those people went through an internal transformation. And so that's working with the soul. And that shows you how deeply important that is, because how much the physical body responded with that work. So it's not just that you're going to be working with the person on one level and it's not going to affect the physical, it is. So one woman really had to deal with issues so that she could really begin to want more out of life, to be selfish for the things that really bring you meaning and satisfaction in life. She was brought up and believed herself that when you want more for yourself, that's being very selfish. So for her to get beyond that and then to start to want to have a more rich life just for herself was huge, and it was big enough to strengthen her immune system along with her medical treatment, you know, that it really turned it around. And when statistics would say, you know, you didn't really have much of a chance. And the other woman as well was in a relationship that wasn't really encouraging her own growth, to put it gently, and she was able to get out of that relationship and to find a new man. Which she says on the tape, you know, how is that for someone 60 or more than 60, you know, and really started to glow and really enjoy her life with this new man in her life, and realized that not just this relationship with this man, but also with her children became much closer as well. So people make these internal changes, but it also has a huge effect on the physical body. And I think that would be the closing thing that I would want people to understand how related these two are.